You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee, Richard Kaufman and Richard Vauxhall.
Happy New Year and welcome to the first Race to Dubai show of 2019. We'll hear from Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas as we look ahead to what promises to be a cracking 12 months on the European Tour, discussing some of the key golfing issues as we go. Plus, Eddie Pepperell joins us to chat about aspirations, awards and Augusta. That's all to come on the Race to Dubai show. Hi, I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined by former Italian Open winner Richard Vauxhall, never to be forgotten, and by golf commentator Richard Kaufman. Boys, Happy New Year.
And to you.
Yes, HNY, Robert, we were discussing earlier, and Richard, I think you can come in with this as well. When do you actually stop saying Happy New Year?
I think by mid-January.
Mid-January.
Yeah, I think it becomes a little embarrassing.
But then there's always somebody you see early February. You know what I mean?
No, but don't you think it sort of naturally peters out?
Yeah. Mid-Jan. I mean, by February, if you say, oh, Happy New Year, like... Yeah. They will give you that. Well, you probably get the strange look often,
yeah.
Boxy. So
I think you're right.
Have you ever had Happy New Year twice off the same person? Because that'd be disturbing, wouldn't it? That meant
they didn't take it on board the first time you said it. No, I don't think I have had that happen yet, Robert.
It'd be a sort of flippant one, you know. Happy New Year. No, you said that half an hour ago.
I've had one off you so far.
Yeah, that'll do, won't it?
Well, we did have another one there when he went Happy New Year. Everyone.
Well, to everybody,
broadcasting.
Generalising.
Yeah, I'm sort of inviting everybody in for a Happy New Year, including you, Richard, again.
Okay, many
thanks.
Second
time. Let's start by talking some of the top Europeans that are around. In the top 10, by the way, of the world rankings, starting with Rory McIlroy. What does Rory expect from his season this year, Rich?
I would think if Rory could ever, made a Christmas wish, it would be that possibly he could knock his wedges a little closer. He's a fantastic iron player. I've been up close watching him hit shots, but with his wedges, as good as he is, he doesn't knock his wedge, nine irons, gap wedges, doesn't knock it anywhere near as close as the others do. And then everyone says, oh, he doesn't putt well. But if you keep knocking it at 20, 25 feet, you know, you can't keep holding those putts, and you keep knocking it at 10 feet or less, you will hold the putts.
You need to stiff a few wedges, don't you, really?
Yeah, you do,
as you're going around. Rich?
Yeah.
To win more. Simple as. What, one win in 24 months for Rory McIlroy, given his talent? I've often said, and I know I'm not alone in that, when Rory's at his best, he is the best. But as was proven the case again in Hawaii in recent hours, in the final group, like he was half a dozen times in 2018, didn't get the job done. In fact, he was a long way off from getting the job done.
He shot 10 shots more than the winner did, Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
72 to 62. That's a big gap, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you look at what happened in 2018, and I know you can't kind of make a generalisation from one round in 2019, but he won't hopefully be thinking, here we go again, because it happened time after time, starting with the event in Dubai, wasn't it, against Hao Tong Li, where he lost out to him. Happened in the Masters with Patrick Reed, and it went on throughout the year. So hopefully, not the case for Rory. He wants to win. I think his focus really is, of course, on trying to win another major.
I thought, I know he didn't win it in the end, but I thought he might win the tournament this week that's just finished yesterday in Hawaii, because...
It was a champions event. He got there because he won at Bay Hill.
Yeah, no, but I thought he might win that event.
Yes,
that, finishing
just a fleeting thought?
I very flippantly first looked at the leaderboard on Friday afternoon, I think it was.
And he was in position.
And he was there, and I thought, and then on Saturday he was there.
Yeah.
And I thought, here we go, listen, what start this is going to be, but not to
but
be.
You mentioned
pointing,
no, because you mentioned his wedge game, and he actually he hit some really good wedges in throughout the week. But again, the final round, everything kind of dissipated. The putts weren't holding.
Yeah.
As Robert said, I think he had, one birdie, I think, in the hole, or a couple of birdies early on, and that's
enough,
it.
His stats, it came up on the telecast, his stats from 150 yards to 125 yards, I think, which would be a wedge for him.
Yeah.
He's right up there.
What,
on the PGA
top.
On the PGA Tour for the year. 150 to 125.
For the year?
For the year. He's right up there.
Well, it's the first tournament of the year.
No, it's not.
Well, you know what I mean. It's the first tournament this year. You're talking about from when their tour started?
Including he's hardly played on the PGA Tour since the Players' Championship.
Yeah.
Or the, what do they call it? The
Tour Championship.
Cup. Yeah, the Tour Champs. So he's hardly played. I don't even think he's played an event on the PGA Tour that would have counted. Maybe played in Shanghai at WGC, maybe. So his wedge play...
Foolish
wedges, they seem to be okay. Well, let's hear from what Rory's been working on before he actually got to Hawaii, starting with his putting.
And I think it's been good. It's been more consistent. You know, I was pretty good in terms of, inside of 8 feet on tour. That was something that I was focusing on and did quite well. Really, my 15 to 20 feet range is what I need to work on. You know, if you look at the stats from last year, and it was really my speed. I was leaving myself sort of 3 and 4 footers coming back a lot, which is maybe partly a mental thing, but also a, you know, a physical sort of stroke thing, and not hitting it out of the center of the putter all the time, so the speed gets a little bit inconsistent. So something I've worked on a little bit over the off season. But short game wise, in terms of like chipping and bunker play, I think it was one of my strongest years last year on tour. Going into last year, I wanted to improve my wedges, my wedge play, and I think I was ranked in the top 10 in most categories inside 150 yards. So that was a big improvement. If anything, last year my strokes gained driving compared to other years wasn't quite as strong as it has been, and that was, you know, part of the reason that I didn't contend more often. A lot of work in the video and a lot of work, you know, indoors, just trying to, you know, not even caring where the ball's going, just sort of hitting into a net and trying to, you know, try to get into certain positions and try to get the club to move a little more fluently throughout the swing. You know, I've looked at the stats from last year going into this year, set myself some goals and you know, just trying to work towards them.
It's always good, Richard. I look at you. You both look at, when I say Richard, you both look
we
up.
Both look at you,
I know.
Yes.
It's one of, I get the doe eyes from the pair of you.
Why don't you say Boxy for...
Can you just be Richard or Dick or what would
whichever
you prefer?
Whichever you like. I
okay. Boxy.
Yes.
How important is goal setting for a top player going into a new year?
I think goal setting is always quite important, but the problem, and I can only do this from my own experience, is if you've reached those goals fairly quickly, you have to have something in place to take its place. Because I did...
Reset.
Yeah, I did one. And I reached my target by May.
Which
one,
was
one
keep
year.
Your card or...?
No, which was avoid Robert Lee at all times. Back in the day, Rich.
The world is waiting.
Yeah, I'm just trying to... my target was to make more than 100 grand.
Okay.
On the race to Dubai.
Well, all
which
right.
was then the order of merit.
Which was then...
the order of merit.
You'd have won the order of merit with 100 grand back then. It was
and
that
I,
long ago.
By the time I got to May...
I thought you were saying by the time I got to Memphis...
Yeah, should be waiting.
Should be waiting.
It'll almost be May by the time we get to the end of this story.
I'm trying to remember it so long
ago. So you
ago.
Achieved it early, basically. So,
yeah, but what I'm trying to say is because I'd made 100 and... I think I'd made something like 118 or 120,000 by May.
Is HMRC aware of this or...?
No. So...
it's a long time ago now.
It all went to my salted away in my account in the Bahamas.
Yes.
So you'd already achieved your goal. So
I'd already achieved my goal, and then by the end of the season, I'd won 148,000. Okay. So what I'm saying is, I'd achieved my goal, I didn't have anything else reset.
You kind of relaxed then, and then I can understand that.
Lost your focus.
Not quite what I call it, but I know what you mean. Yeah, but what was your question to me again? How important are goals?
Is goal setting for a top player as they go into a new year?
Yes, I
so
think...
So Rory's talked quite clearly these set goals.
I think you've got to have a target. But listening to him chat about his putting there, you know, I mean, when he's winning majors, he's not thinking about his putting. You know, when he was winning his majors, and when he got to the position of being able to turn pro, he didn't work on his putting.
Oh, I think that's...
I don't think that's right at all.
Players work on their games at whatever level they're at.
Yeah.
You know, an amateur chopping it down the range is working on something.
Yeah, I think they bring too much into it.
Listen, I know we're a lot older, but he's going to be 30 in May, Rory. I mean, he's been around a long time.
He has, yeah.
He still seems a young whippersnapper.
He's like Wayne Rooney. You know, Wayne's 32 and you think, that's not old, but he has been doing it for a long time. But Rory's really prime time now. He's now right in his prime at the age of coming up to 30.
So in terms of goal setting, surely it's going to be for him. He's got to win one of the majors this year in his mind.
Listen, in the days where Tiger dominated and pretty much everyone else wilted, now there's a whole stack of players that are pretty well matched. You know, the Dustin Johnson, the Justin Thomases, Xander Schauffele's showing everyone what a good player he is, Rory, Justin Rose. There's a whole bunch of players that are at a very similar level. It's going to be hard to win majors to say, I'm going to turn up this year and win a major.
You only got four of them.
He's going to play in the events before the major. So, for example, he's going to play the Scottish Open the week before the Open.
Yeah.
So there's obviously some kind of focus in his schedule, in his mindset, in the way that he's prepared for the season, that he is sort of focusing around those four events.
The thing is, he's got a back catalogue. He can go back to what he did when he won his majors. And, you know, how prepared and how meticulous was your preparation? Or did you turn up... bang that week, you hit all the right buttons and you win. Now, can you find a formula for winning a major? I don't believe you can.
No, I think
winning came a lot easier to him back then as well than it has as I've mentioned, over the last couple of years.
I'd agree with that.
I think it's that mental battle, isn't it? I mean,
he's,
the psychological...
He's been in position over the last 12 months, final rounds, there with a chance to win, and really hasn't produced.
Well, that's seven
events.
He's
not been outdone by who he was playing with, necessarily. No. You know, the final round at the Tour Champs, playing with Woods, and he fizzed it over Tiger's drive at the first miles down there. I thought, here's your chance now, Rory. You can beat Tiger and really get back on that winning trail with something very meaningful. And it didn't work out. So he's got to work out that conundrum.
Yeah, that's seven events now in a row where he's been in the final group and not won.
Not won. Yeah. But, you know, he gets unlucky sometimes. Do you remember in the Middle East for the two tournament? You know, he played in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. He was level 67 and didn't win either one.
Rory, though, throughout his career has been a streaky player. And he's a guy that gets on a run and then he's never out the top five for a period of time. He's winning inside the top five. He doesn't win. He plays like that. And then he falls off that very fine line to try and stand there as the best player in the world, to stay on that mark. Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, they've all found Brooks Koepka, how difficult it is when you get to the world number one to remain the dominant player and keep producing week after week. But Rory is, by definition, a streaky golfer. When he gets his streak back, he'll be ready to perform again.
Let me ask you a question then. Do you think Rory will, A, win more than one event in 2019, and do you think one of those will be a major?
I think he'll win more than one event, yes. And I think he will win a major this year, yeah.
I can't say he will win a major, but do I think he could do? Absolutely.
No, that's not what he's saying.
Well, you just said he will win a major.
Yes, he will. Will he or won't he? Not he could, because we all know he could.
Well, you just said he will win a major.
Yes, I said he will. Yeah, if I make a mistake, it doesn't make me a bad person.
No, it doesn't make you a bad person. I just think it's so competitive at the top. There are so many players that are at a similar level. He could do. Absolutely could do. Is he going to win one? I don't know. It's difficult to win a major. When did he win his last major, Rich?
4 years ago. Easing on to five.
So
really,
that's how difficult it is.
I don't know how difficult. I mean, there's fences out there that people sit on, aren't there, Richard?
He's splintered his bottom right now.
I have to say. Anyway, never mind, Robert.
I was only sharing my thoughts, Richard.
Yes, I know. You asked the question.
I've written down my four major winners of the year. And
yes, I've got Rory for the Masters,
and I've got Rory for the PGA. I've got another European for the Masters.
Yes, I bet that's Francesco Molinari.
Absolutely wrong.
We'll have a look at the end. No, keep your powder dry.
I haven't even loaded the gun yet.
Keep it dry, Richard. Keep it dry. So we'll move on from Rory to Jon Rahm, who's had an explosive eruption into the world of golf. He's been absolutely extraordinary. Everything he's done has just fallen into place. The win over Tiger for him, I think, over the whole year, despite of all the other things he's done, was just magnificent at the Ryder Cup. How good a player is he, Richard Kaufman?
He is the real deal. And you said to keep my powder dry, but you've just mentioned the man who I think is going to win the Masters
in 2019,
Jon Rahm. I think that's his next level. His strike rate since turning pro in terms of top fives, top tens, and even victories is sensational. He has the game to do it all. I think the one part of his game that he maybe needs to improve a little bit, and I mean, that's pushing it out for a guy who's done as much as he has, maybe his putting just needs to be a little better, and he certainly will need a very good putting week to win.
Jeez, I think he's a good putter.
At Augusta National. I know.
I think he's a really good putter.
Yes, but it's a part of his game. Again, look at the stats that he could improve, whereas much of the rest of his game, I don't think, is out there much improvement. Temperament as well.
I was going to mention that.
Do you think his temperament is going to hold him back?
It might do a little bit, yes.
It might do.
The man
who doesn't sit on the fence.
Yes, I said yes.
Can I answer that question?
Yes, you can.
I think his temperament actually will help him. Last year at the US Open, he decided he was going to be this new Jon Rahm. I'm not going to react to anything. I'm not going to lose my temper. And it actually was counterproductive. He missed the cut by a long way, and he found that he needs to be
himself. He's got to play with the fire.
He's got to be himself. Got to play with that passion.
It's like Hatton. Tyrrell Hatton's the same.
I think within his game, he needs that. And we've seen, you know, he ended up winning in Spain that week. He won the event, Tiger's event at the end of the year as well. He beat Tiger in the singles. I mean, the reaction to that Ryder Cup win, fantastic. I want to see players with passion. We don't want to see everyone, you know, robotic. I mean, there's a place for everybody and everyone should react to their own personality. But I think Jon Rahm's personality has got him to where he is, and that is a phenomenal golfer. And I think the next step is a major.
Do you think, Richard, because he's Gaelic, this is Arbuckle.
Okay.
Because he's Spanish, that if he does lose the head on the golf course, it's seen as passion. And if Tyrrell Hatton loses the head on the golf course, it's seen as bad temper.
Not British.
Badly behaved. Not quite the real deal.
No. No, I think they are passionate. And I think it's not so much for the English to be doing.
They get
it.
Hot under the collar, don't they? I mean, both Tyrrell does and John Rahm does. But do you think Tyrrell gets a slightly worse rap because if he was Spanish, you might look at it and think, well, he's got the fire and he's got that sort of innate way of expressing himself that perhaps, you know, the Brits are a little bit colder.
Yes,
it doesn't sit quite as naturally.
I think with Tyrrell, because we're doing the commentary on it and he's sitting there and he's talking in English and you're going, oh, come on, it's not all that bad. You know, a Spaniard could be doing it. We don't know what he's saying because we don't speak Spanish.
But they all speak English.
What I don't get with them is they sometimes they swear in English. I mean, what's all that about?
Well, English is the greatest swearing language in the world. I mean, nearly every golfer that gets done for swearing don't do it in their own language.
Again, I'll answer your question, Robert. If Boxy's not going to, in that I think you're right. I think in a way,
well, I did
John Rahm can get away with more than Tyrrell Hatton can.
I think probably, yeah. I think probably, but again, I love watching both of them. I love watching Tyrrell Hatton play.
I love watching
John Rahm play. Massive fan of John Rahm, and I think you're right, Rich. He's got all the goods. He's got all the bits and pieces you need to be a really top player, which he is, of course. You know, you get into the world's top 10, and you've hardly been a pro for 5 minutes. You've played some phenomenal stuff.
Oh, God, yeah, incredible stuff.
Absolutely incredible. So we'll go from Rory to John Rahm to Francesco Molinari, our Kaufman, who had just an amazing year. You could have defined a career with probably four or five things that he did in just one period of 12 months.
An incredible year. I don't think anyone really necessarily outside the Molinari camp would have predicted what would happen to Francesco in 2018. I just wonder how he then goes on in 2019, because to have achieved so many goals in 2018...
Well, he's not going to beat it. He's never going to beat 2018.
Well, unless he picks up two majors.
He's never going to beat... I'll put it out there. He's never going to beat what he did in 2018.
I agree.
Well, he can't, because the Ryder Cup's not till 2020.
Understand. I'll take the Ryder Cup out of it.
Okay.
Does he become...
Is he going to be the best player in Europe? Is he going to win a major again? All in the same year, mind you. All the things that he did in 1 year.
Probably not, no.
It's impossible to do all that in 1 year. That's never going to happen. But there's nothing wrong with that.
Is he going
to
win a major again? Never mind and do all the other things in 1 year.
If you get to win one major...
He's proper player.
Absolutely, though. A brilliant player. Yeah, he is a brilliant player.
Here's the thing I want to ask.
Resetting goals.
Yes.
How does he reset his goals after the season he's just had?
Well, he'd have to set them very high. But
I'm going to make improvements. I'm going to get better. But at some point, you don't get better.
Do you know, Robert, you've had good years on the tour. We've all had good years on the tour. And I always think the hardest thing after you've had a really good year when you come back is you've had... In our day, it was longer breaks, 4 or 5 months. But when you come back, you expect to be straight back on that leaderboard again. And you know that feeling when you can't get back on the leaderboard. And then all of a sudden, it becomes very difficult.
But nowadays, you don't really get a massive break.
Oh, no, you don't know what I'm saying.
And so it's easier to kind of carry that form over.
Yes, if you continually play. I think
if you end in October and your next tournament's not until March, that's a long time unless you go and find some far-flung place to go and play.
The thing is, though, if he starts missing the odd cut, suddenly in terms of, it's just Francesco Molinari missing the cut, now it's the Open champion, the Ryder Cup star Francesco Molinari's missed another cut, and it becomes something that's bigger than it was 12 months prior. So I just wonder how he's going to handle all that.
I think he'll handle it very well. But here's an interesting one for you. What do you think he got, you know, over Christmas? Do you think he got served first as the Open champion sitting there with Eduardo Molinari when he produced his turkey?
Having dinner with his brother?
Yeah, I mean, how's the conversation go? All right, Bardo.
Well, I think as the plate goes down with the turkey and the stuffing and the sprouts, as it goes down, before the vitreous china hits the formica top of the table, and this is for the champion golfer of the year.
Drinking his red wine out of the claret jug.
out of a chalice. It must be incredible to achieve. I mean, what an achievement of all the things you do to be, you know, like Paul Laurie will tell you, to win an Open Championship as a player, as a European particularly. I don't know. I don't think that warm feeling, that glow that you get from that will ever leave you.
No, ever. I would imagine Jacqueline still got it, wouldn't you?
Well, not on the golf course, but you mean feeling?
No, still got that glowing feeling. Right?
Oh, without a doubt. So how good can Francesco Molinari play this year? Let's ask the same question. Do you think he'll win another major this year?
I don't think he'll win another major now. I think he'll win a few more tournaments. I'm not sure he'll win another major. I think he will win another major in his life. I think he'll win more than one. I think he's the type of bloke, for me, how old is he now, 34?
Mid-30s.
I could see him winning four in total.
Four majors?
Yeah.
Could he take that right now, wouldn't you think?
Four majors. But, you know, Do you remember that game, Arnold Palmer, Pro Shot Golf? I've mentioned this before. Have you, do you remember that as a kid?
No,
you,
I didn't.
You don't remember it. It was a golf shaft.
With a little, a little wire trigger.
It was a metal trigger halfway down the shaft. And at the end, there was a bloke who just went like that. There's no good this on radio, me doing this action, because nobody can see it. But
you're waving your hand.
So Richard's making a swing with his right arm, folks, if you're listening out there. And it's
and
a little bit of
ball.
A flying elbow as he went to the top there. A little bit of a flying elbow.
The flying elbow is there all the time.
It wasn't tucked in.
It's there all the time. In other words, he's so... He is Mr. Pro Shot Golf, Francesco Molinari.
He's a beautiful golfer.
Yeah, I mean, I've played with Langer and I thought his iron play was absolutely fantastic. But I watched Molinari. I think Molinari is the best I've ever seen.
Yeah, but you played with Langer and you saw where the ball went. You thought, well, his iron play is absolutely fantastic. But if you couldn't see where the ball landed and watched his swing...
Oh, no, you think it was all over the place.
150 different swings. He was incredible. But Langer was incredible.
But Stadler was the same. Stadler, I played with Stadler. Stadler would hit a shot and then throw his club onto the bag. And you think, well, that's got to be...
5 feet.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 12, 10 feet right at the flag.
Amazing. Yeah, I can see Francesco winning events in 2019. And in terms of majors, it goes back to what we were saying before. There's just so many potential candidates.
Yeah. It's hard now to be the dominant figure. So let's turn our attention to the battle at the top of the world rankings. And four different players held the world number one spot in 2018. And we can hear from one of those now how important it is getting back to the top of the pile for Justin Thomas. Or how important is it indeed?
It's extremely important. It's not necessarily this year, but it's any year, it's any time. That being said, there's a lot of very stiff and hard competition. There's a lot of guys that are playing really well, and that, you know, there's a handful of guys that are really 2-3 weeks away from, if they win a couple in a row or have a couple good weeks in majors or something, then they could just as easily take it over. So it is very important to me, and it's something I've tried not to think too much about, but also have. But, you know, I'm trying to win golf tournaments. I'm not, and that will result in getting closer or getting to number one. But it's not like I'm out there practicing like, okay, this shot is to get to number one in the world, or I'm trying to win. You know what I mean? So it's just a part of the process. It's so close, you know, especially with BK and Rosie right now. I mean, I don't know if it's ever been that close to where, you know, I mean, one place here and there, even if they finish 25th or 30th, is all the difference.
RB.
BK.
BK. RB, JT. RK. JR. ATW. They're all there.
They're all there. JT.
He's kind of endorsed what we were saying, that to be dominant in amongst... Well, there's probably half a dozen that are super close to being on a level par with each other.
It's sort of like a little merry-go-round that goes round, isn't it? You know what I mean? One falls off, the other one gets back on, and then he falls off.
It's a bit like the top caddies in the world. They just sort of rotate, don't they?
Amongst 12 players.
They go from bag to bag to bag.
Is that good or not for the game?
No, I think it's great. I think it's great.
What caddies or the players you're talking about?
Talk about different players becoming number one, and it's...
I think it's good for it.
Yeah, state of flux like that, I think, is really good. Especially when they're so closely matched. Any one of them could win a major one week, and then they go to the top, and then they're the guy that the others are shooting at. I think it's healthy. You don't think... You're nodding and shaking at the same time, Richard?
No, he's getting over your bit, state of flux. That's the thing.
Well, the only thing I would say is still no one makes golf or the world react to golf like Tiger Woods. And so if Tiger wins, as opposed to Rose or Koepka or Thomas or any of the guys that are up there, like Xander Schauffele, it's still not the same reaction.
Well, because they all know now, they're not going to have the career that Tiger had. Pick any of their ages, where they are, Tiger was tearing up trees, so they're not going to be Tiger Woods, but they're going to be one of a bunch of incredibly talented players that are going to keep that world number one spot something to shoot at and gettable, because no one's going to get, it seems, that far ahead. The others are just too good. In Tiger's day, not only was he the dominant player, he made everyone else around him play badly. Not by doing anything nefarious, just because he made them believe that they were inferior.
It was intimidating.
He did intimidate them.
You should have said to him, I was only asking.
Richard, I am asking.
Yes.
World's top 10, please.
Okay. In 10th spot, Tony Finau. Francesco Molinari is at 9th. McIlroy is 8th. 7th is Jon Rahm. Xander Schauffele is 6th. 5th is Bryson DeChambeau. Justin Rose is number 4. Number 3 is Dustin Johnson. Brooks Koepka coming in there at 2nd. And Justin Rose is leading the way.
When you mention all those top players, Richard, when you mention them all and you sort of rattle them off, R. Kaufman, RK, when you rattle them off, which is the name of those ones at the top that gets left out the most, do you think?
Probably Brooks.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Why is that?
What do you mean? Not mentioned?
So name the top players in the world that could get to world number one. Thomas, Justin Rose, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy. The one that's left out, I think, most of the time in the conversation, just from that sort of mental appreciation who the top players are is Brooks Koepka.
And I think it's beginning to annoy him. There was the Tour Championship on the PGA Tour, the final event of their season. He wasn't brought into the press
room.
Didn't
do the presser.
Pre-tournament.
At where?
At the Tour Championship.
Really?
Eastlake.
So the final event of the year, two-time major winner, wasn't... And it is bothering him. And then there was a list of the top 20 athletes they did in America. I think it was maybe ESPN or someone did it.
And he's player of the year, by the way.
Yeah. And Eira Jatanagan, who's the top player in the women's game, was in there. And he wasn't mentioned in these top 20 athletes. And again...
A two-major season.
Yeah, he commented on that on social. So it's starting to bother him. But it's kind of a two-way street. I think it's because he hasn't necessarily given of himself to the media and to journalists that he maybe is not getting it back, and maybe that's why he's not so much in the spotlight and in everyone's thoughts when it comes to these things.
Well, I mean, everyone is so media hungry these days. You know, personality seems to be a massive thing in today's world of sport. So if you go back in the day when Nick Faldo turned up, you know, was he a personality, would you say? No. He was a golfing machine. His achievements spoke for themselves. He didn't have to put himself out there. He didn't have to engage with people that much. He didn't. He just got on with the business of being the best player in the world, and that's exactly what he did.
It's a very different society now, though, isn't it?
Unbelievably different. I mean, Brooks Koepka back in Nick Faldo's day would be feted like you couldn't believe. But now they're expected to do so much more in terms of engaging with the public, get on their Twitter account, blah, 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 be charming and erudite when they're talking to the media, be larger than life. Mm-hmm. And Brooks is a kind of no-nonsense, fearless, by the way, the way he plays. He's fearless.
Oh, he's proper good
player. He's a fantastic player, Brooks Koepka. Well, let's hear from him because he currently holds two major titles and he's got his eyes on a third with the Masters in April.
I mean, every time I've gone to Augusta, I think I've been trending in the right direction. I think we've gone, 31st, 21st, and 11th, so I can knock off another one. That'd be nice. You know, it's a good little pattern going in. I mean, I like the golf course. It suits me really well. You know, you want to be peaking right around that time. You know, peak in March for the players, and then you've got three majors there, or four majors in, 3.5 months, I think is what it is?
Yes.
So... it'd be a nice time to have my game going in the right direction, feeling confident, and, you know, you've got 3 months till now.
So is golf, Richard, a power game? Considering the players at the top, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, is it a power game?
Well, reading out those names and looking at that list, yes, it is a power game, isn't it? I mean, you've got to have X amount of skill, for sure. No, it is.
One thing in common is they belt it.
Miles.
Yeah.
But
miles.
You look in the top 10 of the world, you've also got Francesco Molinari and Xander Schauffele in there. You wouldn't exactly
Xander's
say...
Xander's not short, by the way.
Neither is Francesco now. He's added to his length.
Francesco's the short guy at that lot.
Yeah, but you still wouldn't call necessarily... You wouldn't label those two guys power
Xander
golfers.
Hits it a long way.
Actually, you'd say in the top 15 in the world rankings, the one that would hit it the shortest probably would be Tommy Fleetwood, who's 13th. I would say he was, out of all those players, hits it the shortest.
You'd say Tommy Fleetwood is shorter than Francesco Molinari. You're kidding, aren't you?
Oh, there's not a great deal in it, I don't think.
I'm not having that.
You think he's a lot longer than him, do you?
I think Tommy Fleetwood, yeah. I think Tommy can get Francesco anytime he wants.
I think so as well.
Do you?
Mm.
Well, I'll have to have a little look then when they next play together, won't I?
But when you look at the top names that we mentioned there,
there's the
correlation between them all is, I mean, they're all fantastic players, yes, but they all are powerful. Par fives or par fours. They have a good driving week like John Rahm or Justin Thomas or Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy. They have a good driving week. The game's easy.
Yeah, but listen, Rob, all you have to do, if you can do it, is if you could set up a golf course like Le Golf National was set up, properly set up for that Ryder Cup, then you can see it's not all about belting it miles then. It's about getting it on the fairway. That's all they have to do. You know, you've got a great big wide America, great big wide open fairways. You knock it into trouble, you can still hit a wood out of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you tighten the course up, put the emphasis on having to hit the fairway, I think that makes a big difference to these big hitters.
The power was negated a little bit at the Ryder Cup, the way they set the course up. But,
definitely.
You know, the Europeans did it right.
Yeah.
They recognised that...
We did, didn't we?
We certainly did. And we also recognised that we knew the course a lot better than they did. Their preparation was poor. Justin Thomas was the guy who won the most points for the Americans, and he was the guy that had the most rounds around Le Golf National. Surprise.
Robert, the Americans had 8 rounds or 6 rounds between them. We'd had 288.
That's right.
Something like
both those figures are fairly close.
Yeah, they are. It was amazing, really.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting, Richard, looking ahead to this year's US Open to see how they set that course up, because they don't always get it right, do they? They made a mess of Shinnecock.
Well,
the last day got them out of jail because they put some water on the greens. Tommy Fleetwood had that putt for 62. But the first 3 days were a debacle.
But hasn't the man in charge departed? The man in charge of the US Open setup. So there's
Mike Davis.
Yes, he is now departed. So there may be a sea change.
There might be a par 72, but I doubt it.
There might be what, Richard?
The par of 72 would be nice to see it go up to that. It's always par 70. They never go over 70.
I don't mind the par 70. I mean,
I just find it ridiculous. You've got holes 535 yards. It's par 4. I mean,
it should be.
No, it shouldn't. It'd be par 5.
Well, a drive of 320 long. Yards.
If you can,
you've got a 6-iron in.
Why does it matter? I mean, the lowest score will win.
Yes, there is that to it, but I think you've got par 3s, par 4s and par 5s, and there has to be put a line as to when a par 4 finishes and when a par 5 starts.
No, it has to move. The equipment and the balls have made the old 475 par 5. That's just a nonsense now.
I'm not saying that.
Well, you are saying that.
No, I'm not.
So
I'm saying draw a line on 500 yards.
That's not enough.
500 yards is a par 4. So 501 is a par 5.
So if it's a 510-yard downhill 501's
hole, a par 5 for a pro.
Which they can make with a 5-iron, 6-iron, you're saying that should still be a par 5?
They can hit drive and a wedge to 500-yard holes.
Doesn't make any difference.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's never been a par 5, is it?
But tighten the hole up. Make it tight.
So, Richard, going forward, anything 501 is a par 5 for you?
501's par 5, yeah.
Not a pair of jeans?
No.
Well, we talked about changes, Richard's changes to par 5s. 501 is the new par 5 standard for the world of professional golf.
Yeah.
Driving a wedge, par 5. Let's talk about changes to the calendar, because our guests have mentioned that already today about how the major that was the fourth major has now become the second major, how that's changed and shifted, what the world schedule looks like, Richard Kaufman.
Yeah, the schedule's going to change, and I think some of the players aren't quite sure exactly how the year's going to pan out. But basically, the year in terms of the majors now is more concentrated. So you've got a major now in April,
one
May, June and July.
Yeah.
So
I think that's good.
Yeah, although then there's a long gap now between July and...
But the trouble is, for the European Tour to work their schedule in amongst the world's top 50 players who will be going to the Players' Championship in March, the Masters in April, the PGA in May, the US Open in June, the Open in July, to work a schedule in amongst other tournaments that the top players will play near the majors is difficult.
Yeah, I think it'll take a couple of years for it to sort of settle down and to players to know. For example, I know Francesco Molinari wants to play the British Masters at Hillside, which is now going to be in May, a fantastic golf course. But he said it depends on how his season starts. Obviously, Tommy Fleetwood, who's hosting, has invited him, and Francesco would love to be there, but he just wants to see how his year starts.
Think,
so it'll be interesting to see.
Do you think he would have been there if Fleetwood wasn't hosting it?
I don't know. Probably not.
So going back to the calendar, so we talked about the USPGA Championship in May. The European Tour starts in Abu Dhabi, the HSBC Championship, Richard, which has now become a Rolex Series event.
It has, one of eight, and I shall be heading down there at the weekend.
And the BMW PGA Championship, which used to be in May, which is now the USPGA Championship, that goes towards the end of the season into September, Richard. And Wentworth, traditionally, in September is when it's at its best.
Yeah, very much so. That's about a month short of before they used to play the World Match Play down there, and that was always, the greens were in fantastic condition.
And the British Masters, now hosted by Tommy Fleetwood on the northwest coast of England, Richard, will be tremendous. That's in May.
Yeah, I was actually at Hillside Golf Club last year. They hosted the Women's British Amateur Championship there, and it is a fabulous golf
course.
It's going to be a great setting, and hopefully Tommy
Fleetwood to get a great field.
Yeah,
let's hope
absolutely.
So.
Have you played Hillside?
Yeah, the railway down the railway line, left hand side, the first.
That's it.
I can't say I've ever noticed it, Richard.
No, I haven't either.
I've never seen that. Tiddly, tiddly, what's that? It's out of bounds. Oh my God, how far right can I aim?
Did you play the Brabazon there in 1980?
No.
I finished second.
Did you?
Yeah.
No one remembers second, you
see.
I didn't know.
I do.
Who won?
Paul Way.
Not bad, Ryder Cup player, PGA champion. Not bad.
Let the lad move
on. Not bad. You thought, give him a little nudge, didn't you?
Give him a nudge.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So how do you think the season's going to play out then for some of the top players that seem to be mumbling about the difficulty of playing European Tour golf before the summer?
I'd like that problem, wouldn't you? I don't see that's going to be a problem at all. I mean, Richard here, to my left, was saying it might take a few years to sort it out. I think they'll slide into it pretty quickly. format. And well, also, I think, you know, April, May, June, July for four majors is great.
Let's talk about the European Tour player you think is most likely to win his first major this year.
I will go for Torbjørn Olesen.
Yeah, very good. Good call. I was very pleased for him at the Ryder Cup to get his point.
Yes, no, so was I. Can you see him trying to screw a name out of the European race to Dubai?
No, I've got
thinking.
Mine.
Have you got yours?
I've got mine, yeah. Oh, so you're going to Bjorn Olesen. You think he's the European who hasn't won a major, most likely two.
I think he's most likely
two. I've already mentioned mine, haven't I?
John Rahm.
John Rahm, yeah.
John Rahm.
So, on to you, Robert.
I've got a funny feeling for Lee Westwood.
Have you?
Yeah. I've got a funny feeling this year for Lee Westwood.
Right. Well, what is he now? 48 or 9? No, he's not that old.
He's not.
Well, I'd tell you, 46.
He's six cusping seven, I think.
Yeah. Correct, yeah.
I don't know why. The way he finished off in South Africa was really impressive. And if he can produce anything like that, he still hits the ball as well as he ever did. Good putting week. You just never know.
No.
And maybe that's my heart speaking a little bit, thinking, you know, rather like Sergio, God, when's he going to win his major? And he wins the Masters. And, you know, Lee Westwood, if ever a guy deserved to win a major, it's probably him who hasn't done. Maybe there's a bit of that, but it would be great if that happened. European Tour players to watch this year.
Well, I think Aaron Rye will have a very good season. And I'm going to throw another one in.
Go on.
I'm going to throw in, and I haven't seen him play a lot, but I've heard a lot about him. Jack Singh Bra.
Yeah.
Plays on the Challenge Tour. There's chat going around. He's a very good player. There you go. I'm going to throw him. Keep an eye on him out on the Challenge Tour. Might even make his way onto the main tour.
Okay, seeing Boxy picked up a guy...
He had two for the price of one.
Exactly, he picked up a...
And already a previous winner.
Yeah, a guy who played well in Hong Kong.
Who are you going for, Francesco Molinari?
This is not my man, but who I was going to say as the man, but Victor Perez, who played very well there, had a phenomenal finish to the Challenge Tour season. Boxy, you got your hands up?
Yes, can I just... There is another one I have to throw in. My third one.
I haven't got to my second yet.
Go on, you finish.
No, carry on.
All right, let me throw my third in.
Richard, let him go, otherwise he'll forget.
I will forget. The third one is Jorge Campillo. He'll win.
I'm actually going to mention another Spaniard. Who?
Ortegi.
One to watch, as in one that's not
Adrian
one.
Ortegi.
Who's a new man on the tour this year. I actually met him for the first time.
Not who I met. Here we go.
In Asia.
He asked
Victor,
me for some gum. I gave him some chewing gum. We had a chat.
Victor, isn't it?
He'll remember it, not at all. But
you weren't stuck in some sort of airport somewhere.
No. This was at the golf course. He was playing in an event, end of season event in Asia, and he just turned pro. This was a year ago, and he'd already won twice as an amateur on the Alps Tour, played his rookie season on the Challenge Tour, and came close to winning. He looked like he was going to get his card on the European Tour without winning, and then won the grand final wire to wire from start to finish. He hits it.
Miles.
Like all these young guys, an absolute mile. He's had a glittering amateur career, and as a pro, he's already stepped up. He played in South Africa and finished top 10 at the Alfred Dunhill I'm talking about.
Yes, I hope you can remember his name at the end of this big build-up.
Adri Arnaus.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, excellent.
Young Spanish guy, went to Texas University, college teammate of Cameron Champ. I mean, I'm not sure who won the long driving contest between those two, but I mean, this is a guy I feel that could be of similar ilk to Cameron Champ, so watch out for that name.
Cameron Champ hits the ball so far.
Does he?
One of the holes in Hawaii, Rory smashed a drive. It's come up 3 or 4 yards short of the bunker. Cameron Champ eased off it, and it went pounding through the back of the green. Then he didn't give it a swipe. He just gave it like a pat down there. Now, you two have mentioned players who you feel might do well this year. Let's talk to a player who has done well over the last 12 months. Eddie Pepperell, who joins us on the line now. Happy New Year to you, Eddie. Welcome to the Race to Dubai show.
Thanks, guys. Happy New Year to you as well.
Listen, your year's just starting, or is it just finishing? How does it feel? Where do you feel you are in the whole thing?
I don't know, really. It's away over Christmas, so that felt a little odd. Yeah, and with having an injury for a few months, it's all thrown it all a bit up in the air. You know, I was planning originally on playing quite a lot of golf through to the end of the year, because I don't like stopping and starting. That doesn't tend to do me much good. But I've been forced to stop and start, I've just got fatter, really, I think.
Well, listen, Eddie, we've all got fatter, that's for sure. Did you get everything you wanted for Christmas, first of all?
I think so.
You did, that was good. I can't
believe... He got an envelope, Richard.
Yes. That one that's got a little tinge of green on it.
A hint of green around the edges.
Yes, that'll be very nice. I can't believe... Defending in... How long have we got to go now? About 6 weeks till you start defending. I can't believe, first of all, how well you've played since your win and how quick it's gone.
Well, every year seems to go quick on tour, it seems, but... Yeah, I've certainly played pretty well. Certainly from July onwards, obviously, winning the title was great. and then it was a bit slow again. And then really from July onwards, I'd say my golf was very good generally. So part of the reason why I was disappointed to have the injury and then be out of action for a few months, because I did feel like I was building nice momentum and I wanted to really take that into this year, into 19, but obviously nothing quite happened, but it's been good.
Just for the record, I can believe how well you've played, Eddie. You've been tremendous, had a fantastic year, record-setting season for you. How do you set goals for 2019? How do you improve on what you've done?
Well, I mean, the good news is I haven't set goals for years, so if 18 was an improvement on 17, then I really, you know, good news is for that, I don't need to set many goals for 2019 to make it better than last year, so I just have to keep doing what I've been doing, and that sounds, you know, unfortunately, like a cliche, which is boring. It's the truth. And the good news is, for me at least, those things I've been focusing on have kind of roughly been the same for a good 18-month period. And, you know, if I can keep doing that, then the truth is I don't know how good I can get within that framework, and I don't know where that framework can take me. But as of now, it certainly seems to be, you know, helping me keep improving, and that's quite exciting for me.
So let's talk about Magnolia Lane.
Yeah.
Let's talk about getting to Augusta. I mean, what's that like to get that little piece of paper that says you're actually going to be there?
I think my dad was more excited than me.
It certainly looked that way on the video.
Oh, did it? I didn't see. Has it come with a first-class stamp? I mean, what's the story?
I don't know, actually. I think I ripped that part of the envelope when there's come in two envelopes. Well, my dad went around the house the day we were getting back from holidays to put the heating on for us, and he obviously picked the letter up and brought it to the airport with him, and my girlfriend just started videoing him, and... Yeah, I mean, this is cool, obviously. I kind of was expecting it. I knew it was going to come, so...
You've not been there before, though, have you?
No, I've never been.
I never played it. I have been there a few times, but you actually won't believe how hilly it is, you know, when you get there.
No, everyone said that, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. I've never played very well on hilly golf courses, so I'm not looking forward to that. I think that 1 week, Nick, this year is going to be a bit different to the rest, because I think it's fair to say I'm going to go there with no expectations, and I'm quite happy with that, you know. That is the one event, the first time you're there, where I kind of want to just have a great time. I'm going to go out with my family and, you know, just really enjoy the week. And whatever happens, kind of happens. You know, it's going to be obviously special to be there.
Playing in all the majors, Eddie, is going to be special for you. In terms of significant rounds, obviously winning in Qatar, then winning at the end of the year at the British Masters, great wins for you. But how significant was that final round at the Open, and maybe even pushing yourself into contention to winning, although in the end a couple of shots out?
It was obviously significant, you know, playing with Mickelson. The thing is with me, though, is if I play well and I'm playing on a links course, I kind of do feel like I could beat anybody in the world around a links golf course when I'm playing my best in breezy conditions. So I think my game is kind of suited to that. Obviously, if you start sticking me on courses where we play, say, at Belrive, USPGA and whatnot, yeah, things become a little tougher for me, because I'm not on the longest hitter, and driver hasn't historically been the strongest club in my bag. So I think with me, there is still an element of prioritisation going on with tournaments and expectations, therefore determined by the natures of the events and the courses. So that was a great round for me, obviously, to do that in that company. But to finish sixth in the Open wasn't that surprising, given that I just finished second the week before in the Scottish Open in a strong field. So, you know, I think for me, I'm going to become more and more excited should I start to do things like that in other majors.
What about your European Tour shot of the year?
Yeah, I mean, that's been pretty cool. You know, I've had a few people come up to me and say, oh, what a cool thing that is to win. And I guess it is. Listen, I actually think my old 9-iron on the Sunday was better, but obviously the hole-in-one was certainly more different and unusual. So, yeah, pretty cool moment. And to have one shot of the year, I guess, it's certainly nice.
Eddie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You've had a phenomenal year. May your career go in leaps and bounds into 2019. We're really looking forward to seeing what you can achieve this year.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie.
Yes, guys.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. See you all soon. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
And you.
It's great to hear from Eddie. I love hearing his interviews during the season. They're always very different. And I like the bit of spike, Richard, that's in there.
Oh, he's solid. He's
a little bit spiky. A little bit spiky sometimes.
What you mean is it's slightly different, isn't he, to the others?
Yeah.
He actually speaks his mind very much so. And I don't do Twitter and all that sort of stuff, but he does all these blogs and Twitter and stuff like that. And he's very interesting.
No, and he's very plugged into the sort of non-golfing world that we all live in terms of politics and everything else. So yeah. he's an interesting lad. And great to have him on the show. It was really good of him to spend time with us at the very start of a stellar year on the Race to Dubai show, may I say. Well, we talked about changes in the schedule. Let's talk about changes to the rules of golf, because no doubt people are going to get caught out with some of the different ways of playing the game that are going to come into effect In fact, a few days ago, the 1st of January 2019. Let's hear from Justin Thomas, one of the world's top players and friends, about what they're concerned about.
Yeah, I've tried to spend a lot of time looking over them. They're especially, you know, a handful of them are quite a bit different. And I mean, I think you'll see it across the field, especially these first couple months. You know, everybody's going to be calling a rules official in as much as possible. So unfortunately, play is probably not going to be too fast. You'd hate to get penalized just for making a mistake for something you've done your whole life. So it'll be different.
I actually just looked at it for like a minute upstairs before I came down. We got a big poster in the locker room. It's really not, you know, much different. The, probably the biggest thing, I think, is being able to leave the flag in and then the drop height. Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a few guys getting penalties.
I mean, it might help pace of play a little bit. I think it's going to be very strange for guys to top down spike marks, to top in with the pin in, practicing your drops from your knees. Brian Harmon's got a big advantage. You know, he can basically place it. Or you've got someone like Tony Finau who's dropping it from probably like waist high for me. So, you know, they're trying to simplify the rules, which I think is a great thing for the game. I've always said that the rules of golf are way too complicated. So I'm happy that they made the decision to try and simplify them and just try to make everything a little bit easier to understand.
That was Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy talking about. And they do realise that they might get caught out by the new changes in the rules. There's a whole bunch of them. We're just going to highlight just a few of them. Richard, you got a couple?
Listen, we're going to go dropping from knee height now. You know, normally you held your arm out shoulder height and dropped it from there. It's now from the knee.
Because they were originally thinking you can drop it from an inch above the ground.
Yeah, well, you might as well have placed it.
Well, that was the point.
Exactly.
There would be complete...
Did you see Bryson DeChambeau trying to do that in Hawaii? He was very funny.
Bending all over the place.
Well, he had to bring the referee in to help him.
Then
he was... Yeah, he looked very awkward doing it.
I'll tell you another Bryson DeChambeau, and I timed it. He was first to putt, and the clock was still running at 2:10 for him to hit a 30-foot putt.
Because that's one of the new rules as well, isn't it? Ready golf.
Richard, and 10 seconds to hit a putt.
It's ridiculous. I could have had three by then.
They went away and came back, and he was still the book, looking, walking, aiming. It was just ridiculous.
There's meant to be monitoring penalties now as well,
I mean,
40 seconds.
Where are the referees saying, right, penalty, that's ridiculous. You've got a straightforward putt, and it's 2:10. Absolute nonsense.
Couldn't agree more. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, talking about the dropping, do you remember when we used to drop it over our shoulder?
Yes.
You think, oh, I'll never get used to dropping it out the front shoulder height, but you do. So they'll get used to it. So that's just one of them, dropping now from knee height, as Richard says, getting into several different positions to drop it from knee
height.
Is
there any advantage for dropping it above the knee? You know, if you see someone, because they'll go, oh, you dropped it below your knee height
there. I don't know.
Is there any advantage from... a player's going to bother pulling someone up if they've dropped it from above knee height?
You can guarantee somebody will.
Yeah.
So you drop that above the patella. Anyway, listen, Robert, let me give you another rule, shall I? And here's an interesting one. Spike marks on the green can be repaired. I hear all the amateurs screaming, well, I've always done that in the monthly medal.
That's how it used to be when we turned pro, and that is going to slow the game up.
That will slow it down.
Massively.
Because you could almost give it the rut.
The groove.
The groove up to the hole, you know, just from 2 or 3 feet, you know, with this spike mark.
That's the reason they stopped it, because pros just started tapping down anything, everything.
I have seen that happen before, Robert.
Tap, all the way at the hole. It's gonna slow the game down.
Anyway, that's a couple I've picked out.
Rich,
have you got?
A club that's been damaged, even in anger, can be repaired and used in the rest of the round,
right?
Which will help one or two players. I think there's one or two who wish it had changed prior to 2019. Water hazards. They're now known as penalty areas, as can other areas of courses be, if so deemed by the committee.
I think you're no longer entitled on a lateral hazard to go the other side of the hazard anymore.
No, you have to go. You have to work out where it actually entered between the three of you or two of you who are playing.
Yeah.
You go, right, that's where it entered.
There's going to be fun and games, isn't there? You can see what's going to happen.
There'll be games. Whether there'll be fun, but there'll be games.
Putting with the flag in, I think...
I'm not sure about that.
I think that's a good thing. I mean, I remember years ago as a young waif going, you know, around the sort of municipal 9-hole putting green at Littlehampton, always left the flags in. Not a problem. You know,
depends
and they had the little cup.
You pull the
metal pole out and it's got the little cup that brought the ball out of the hole.
Yeah, I do.
But just on that, though, I mean,
would you be putting with the flag in? Just if you were
from distance, absolutely.
But if you're like, did you see Bryson DeChambeau again to bring him up putting from 6-7 feet?
Yeah, but
out?
He's on a mission to do everything his own way. He's like a pimped up Padraig Harrington.
Well, he says
I don't think you'll see a lot. If it was me,
look right, does it?
If I was off the green, I wouldn't leave the pin in, I'd leave it in. But I don't think if ever I was on the green, I wouldn't have my caddy attend the flag. Because I've seen balls go up to the hole that are going in at proper pace and just catch the edge of the flag and stay out many times.
I've seen players have the caddy hold the flag, they've putted from distance, it is going right in the middle of the hole, and now the caddy's realised that the pin is stuck, he can't pull it out, and he's given it an almighty yank to get the flag out the hole, and he pulled the cup out the hole, half out the hole, and the ball just bounced off the cup and didn't go in.
But have you heard Bryson's reason for leaving the flag in? He says it depends...
Statistically, he says.
He says it depends on the coefficient of the restitution of the flag stick, which makes total sense,
he said the US
it?
Open flags he will take out. More. US Open flags he will take out, and the rest of the flags he'll put them in.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're thick.
A different bounce factor on them.
Yeah, it's fiberglass. Apparently, the US Open is different. But Dave Peltz, who's seen as
self-appointed scientist,
is indeed short game. He's done some studies on it, worked out the maths, and he agrees with Bryson that there's a greater chance of the ball going in with the flag in. But that's just the science. I just think visually, in terms of the way you're looking at the putt, I think the hole looks smaller with a flag stick in it.
Has that affected your putting? Or
yes, that's my excuse, and I'm sticking with it. Yes.
Have you picked your two?
Hang on, hold on. 3 minutes to look for a ball instead of five. That's a move forward in the right direction.
Yes, I think 5 minutes was too long.
Rich?
Especially with spectators that are around.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Three minutes makes sense.
All right. So what we're going to have now on the tours around the world is a referee. They already get called in for ridiculous ones that players should know anyway, but now they're going to get called in for every single just to make sure I got it right situation.
Well, even over a dropping from the knee scenario, as we saw.
Is that a knee height?
Exactly, from Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah, I think the first 2-3 months play is going to be slowed down by referees being called in left, right and centre.
Right, before we go, let's talk about potentially who might be named this week as the new Ryder Cup captain. There's been a lot of chat that it is Padraig Harrington. It's not confirmed, but a lot of chat that he is the man.
I think.
And
if he is,
what do you think?
I think, yes, it's a... probably a no-brainer, really. He's the man for the job. Get on. He's on a bit of a hiding to nothing after what happened last time at the Golf National. He's going abroad. He's in America.
Look, you can be a great captain and lose,
yes,
and you can be a bad captain and win.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be defined by the result. You should be defined by what your players think about your effort as the captain.
I think the chances are Padraig will be a great captain and lose. I mean, I think he'll do everything right. I'm sure going to go with the blueprint that's already there, following the footsteps.
He's not going to use you for his PR, is he?
Well, it's going to be tough, isn't it?
Speaking on behalf of Team Harrington, well, I can assure you this, he's going to be a great captain and probably lose.
Well, the chances are home advantage now is such a big deal that it's going to be difficult for Team Europe to win in America in 2020. But...
he's got
hasn't he? Yeah, he's going to be very methodical. I know he's been taking notes at all the Ryder Cups that he's played in, and obviously recently being vice-captain at a view as well. So I think he'll leave no stone unturned, and I think he'll do an excellent job. Whether he wins or not, though, that's, another matter.
I love Padraig Harrington. Go on.
Do you think Robert Carlson, just saying this, do you think Robert Carlson will ever be Ryder Cup captain?
He could be. Yeah, he could be. Yeah, well, he could.
Do you think he ever will be?
No, I don't know. I thought Sandy Lahr might get a go, and I thought Miguel Angel Jimenez might get a go, but they didn't. Everyone can't get a go.
Because Lee Westwood will be probably the next Ryder Cup captain on home soil.
Winner of a major, he fancies this year, probably.
Yeah, I've just got a feeling
I wonder Padraig, if he is the captain, can recruit Xander Schauffele, because his dad's half German, half French, so, I mean, Peter Karmas is now Greek, and Rory Sabatini apparently is going to play for Slovakia now.
I saw that.
So, so why not have Xander Schauffele in Team Europe?
Team Europe are doing okay.
Yeah, true.
We're doing okay. And I think Padraig Harrington would be a marvellous captain. He was the forerunner to Bryson DeChambeau. Without a doubt, Padraig would come up with stuff, that some of the swing moves he made with the leg up in the air, and he's done a whole bunch of stuff that were beyond the moon stuff. And he's just, I think he is a breath of fresh air. I think Harrington will be, if he is this week confirmed as the new Ryder Cup captain, I think he'll do a magnificent job. So I'm thoroughly looking forward to that. So before we go, we mentioned it earlier on the show about Richard was, getting his picks in early for the PGA Championship and the Masters. Let's go through them one by one. Who are your picks to win at Augusta, Richard?
Just the one
as in
pick,
Vauxhall.
As in one pick.
Well, the pick, yes. Your pick.
Brooks
your
Koepka.
Pick. Yeah, because you heard Brooks talking about how he was trending at Augusta.
And yeah, bear in mind, last year, wasn't he? He'd only just come back from injury, hadn't he?
That's why his year was so amazing.
Yeah.
Spending all that time on the couch thinking, am I going to be able to play at all? And then he's two majors later, he's player of the year. Incredible. Richard.
So I went with John Rahm, so I'll stick with that.
At the Masters?
At the Masters, yeah.
And I'm going to go with Rory at the Masters.
Okay.
And that's fine. It's not better or worse than your choice. It's just my choice.
Mm-hmm. USPGA.
Rich, USPGA.
Justin Thomas.
Where are we? We're Bethpage Black, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bethpage Noir.
I'm going to go with someone who's won there before, Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
You've been itching to bring him in.
Yeah, he's been trying to get TW into the conversation.
Yep.
The needle mover.
Number 15.
I'm going to go for John Rahm at Bethpage Black.
Okay.
So Rahm is featuring quite strongly in the first two majors.
Yes, he is.
And let's go to the third major of the year, which used to be the second, but it's now the US Open.
I have gone for Francesco Molinari.
To
very
win US
straight
Open.
Hitter.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Very, very. Two very, verys there. Yeah, accurate off the tee.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they set up Pebble Beach, though, for that one. I'm going to go with Jason Day.
I'm going to go with...
He hasn't been around.
I'm going to go with Tiger Woods.
Okay.
At Pebble Beach.
So we've got similar picks, but different orders.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if Tiger is back into any sort of form, he loves Pebble Beach. So.
You two are fairly similar. Yes. I'm a bit wayward from you two.
Yeah. Well, that's
the way it should be.
Noticeable.
Yeah.
And then the last final one. Major now, it's odd to say this, a really strange feel to a vibe, but the last major, it's a great position for it to be now, the Open.
Yes.
You've had all the other pretend majors.
Yes.
Here's the real major in July, and it's going to be in Northern Ireland, Richard, which will be, it's already sold out.
It has, yeah. Royal Portrush, it'll be absolutely fantastic. The crowds will absolutely love it, and they'll really enjoy watching Torbjørn Olesen win there.
But they'll love it even more when Rory picks up the claret jug.
Again,
mm-hmm.
His second win.
Mm.
But he's got the career slam thing going at Augusta. Jordan Spieth's got the career slam thing going at the USPGA. Phil's got the career slam thing going at the US Open. What are the chances of one of those doing that, well, seemingly impossible thing, to become the sixth person ever to win the four majors?
Oh, I say, it's not easy, is it?
Rory, Jordan, and Phil. Yes, and it's got to be in a specific week. That's why it's so difficult to close out your fourth one. What are the chances?
Well, for one of them doing it, I would say there's a decent chance of it. I mean, Rory to win the Masters, why not?
I'm going to go for Ricky Fowler quickly at the Open because the weather could be really nasty there and he's a really good win player. And I think it's about time he won a major. That's about it for now. Join us next week when we will hear from the new European Ryder Cup captain, whoever he may be, and bring you a full preview of the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship presented by EGA, a Rolex Series event no less, and the first stop of the year on the European Tour. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat by europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from Audio Boom, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, but only nice ones, please. But until then, from Richard Boxall,
goodbye.
Richard Kaufman,
bye-bye.
And myself, Robert Lee, it's goodbye.